Austin, Texas. It's Dave and Knight.
Well, it's Friday, November the 17th, 2017. I'm David Knight, your host. I have a lot of news today. It's amazing what is going on in Saudi Arabia, in Zimbabwe, near South Africa, as well as what's going on in Venezuela. We have massive unrest in Saudi Arabia. Now we've got the new crown prince looks like he's going to become the king. This is very unprecedented in Saudi Arabia, as is this kind of coup that we have seen. And as we pointed out about this last couple of days, is this guy really the one that we should be hitching our horse to? It looks like there's going to be a Mideast war. They're trying to pick war with Iran, with Lebanon, with many other countries. And what is that going to mean for us here in America? As we pointed out yesterday, several oil analysts believe that it could cause a 300% spike in the price of oil. Take a look at what you're paying at the pump right now. You're paying $2 or $3 a gallon. You want to pay $12 to $18 a gallon. What's it going to do to the economy with all the goods that are shipped around? Meanwhile, in Saudi Arabia, the prince there is saying that he's going to let some of the people that he has kidnapped go if they give him 70% of the wealth. They can buy their way out of the prison. And it's kind of interesting if you look at the pictures of where they are. He incarcerated them in the Ritz Hotel. This is the way you do time if you are a Saudi royal. And they were roughing it. In this Ritz Hotel, they've got them all in a large ballroom with mats on the floor. I don't know what kind of room service they get, but we'll find out about that. Meanwhile, we're going to take a look at the effects of communism, as well as the pushback from Hillary Clinton and others saying, how dare you? I find it personally offensive that anyone should even suggest that I be investigated. We're actually going to play that clip for you. You will not believe what she has to say. And we've got another irony here. J.P. Morgan, the people who were slamming Bitcoin, caused it to lose a quarter of its value way back when it was $4,000 per coin. It fell to $3,000, then quickly recouped that amount of money within just a couple of days after J.P. Morgan and others tried to take it down. Now they're being busted for money laundering. Isn't that interesting? And when you see this unrest that is happening in Zimbabwe, it has pushed the price of Bitcoin to more than double. When it was about $6,500 last week, it's now closing in on $8,000 and heading straight up because of this kind of unrest. What we see in Saudi Arabia, because of what we saw in Zimbabwe, the price in Zimbabwe at that time was double what the world market price was. What do you think the price of Bitcoin is in Saudi Arabia as these people are looking at the moves of the Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, or MBS, as he's colloquially known? This kind of uncertainty, this kind of unrest, and we're going to take a look at what is happening to communism around the world. Some very interesting things determined from the defector that got shot multiple times is near death. As they are doing medical treatments on him, they find that the parasites and the diets that they the food that they found in his intestine indicates the kind of lifestyle they have in communist countries. As we see Venezuela now going into official default. Isn't that what we always see with communism? Maybe this gigantic worm that they found in his intestine, which is 10 and a half inches long. They said, the doctor said, I'd never seen anything like that except in textbooks. That is illustrative of the poverty, the starvation, the lack of hygiene that they have in this communist country. Maybe what they should do is create a new species or genus for this thing and name it after Kim Jong-un, or at least name it after Marx and Lenin, you know, because aren't they kind of like intestinal parasites themselves? Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
from the InfoWars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
It's Friday, November 17th, 2017. I'm David Knight. Today we're going to take a look at what's going on in the Senate. We have new allegations. We're going to give you some updates about what's going on with Al Franken. We'll give you updates about what's going on with Roy Moore, as well as Bob Menendez, who was just found not guilty by the jury. They had a hung jury. You remember, that was a nine-week trial. A lot of charges to understand there. Some of the charges were not allowed to be presented to the jury in that particular trial. The judge blocked that. But as they went to deliberate, one of the jurors sent a question to the judge and said, "What is a senator?" When I saw that, I said, well, we're in trouble here. I don't think they're going to be able to understand the issues here if they don't understand what a senator is. So we're going to talk about Menendez, Moore, Al Franken, and let's start with Hillary Clinton before we get to the meltdown of socialism and communism worldwide. Hillary Clinton uses socialist policies to get involved, but really she's maybe more of a kleptocrat than anything else. Wouldn't you say? Bernie Sanders, yeah, he's a diehard true believer in socialism. He still loves the Sandinistas. I called him Bernie Sandernista as a video surfaced of him going down there. He still can't bring himself to criticize anything about socialism, no matter the failures that we see around the world historically. But let's take a look at the kleptocrat Hillary Clinton. As there are calls for an investigation, she's being defended by the media. What a surprise. The same media that goes after any real conservative. They don't go after the establishment Republicans. No. If you're a real conservative, they're going to come after you pretty hard. Pretty hard. They're going to hold you to an extreme standard. Not that, we're talking about Roy Moore. Not that if he's guilty of these charges, that he shouldn't be held to account for these charges. Not saying that. I'm just saying that without any evidence, they're going after him for these charges. And even when there is evidence that these charges were manufactured, like there is with the information that was part of the Gloria Allred client, that looks totally bogus. And that is a very interesting development. And I think it's very interesting that it is not being reported. You're not really hearing it even on Fox News. They're not talking about the yearbook. They're not talking about Gloria Allred. Seriously? That indicates the bias, in my opinion, because that is a very clear case. It took a while for that to come out. But I said at the beginning, we've seen Gloria Allred do this stuff before. I know this is false. This is a scripted. You remember when that first came out and I played the clip of Summer Zervos that Gloria Allred had pulled out to come after Donald Trump about a month before the election? And I said, oh, wait a minute, that's the wrong woman. The one that we had about Roy Moore, she was older and had dark hair. This is a younger woman with blonde hair. And then we played it, basically the same thing. We'll get to that in a minute. But let's talk about Hillary Clinton. As WND said, the media is shooting down the Hillary Clinton investigation. And they're talking about the Washington Post and others are pushing back on whether or not there should be an investigation. To me, the most interesting thing is that you've got Fox News' Shepard Smith pushing back on this. And he's been called out by a lot of people. He's been called out, Breitbart, Zero Hedge, others. One individual tweeted out, did anyone watch Shep Smith just explain how Hillary Clinton had nothing to do with the uranium deal? What a joke, Fox News. Send him on to CNN. And here's some of the examples of what he did. He misled viewers over the fact that while nine agencies that compromised CFIUS, this is the oversight agencies, things like the Department of Justice, the State Department where Hillary Clinton was, other departments, there's nine of them that look at the sale of anything that could affect our national security. CFIUS is an acronym for the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States. And so what Shep Smith was telling everybody was that this was Obama's decision. No, it wasn't. Any one of these agencies had the power to veto this. So you had the Treasury Department, the Department of Justice, you had the State Department, Hillary Clinton, and many others. Another point that they make in the article, another key fact admitted by Shepard Smith, was the timing of funds flowing to the Clintons, including the $500,000 speaking fee that Bill Clinton was paid by a Russian bank, which issued a buy rating to Uranium One during the CFIUS review process. So remember, that happened, that review process was taking place after the FBI had been investigating this for quite some time, with an eyewitness telling them about the corruption. Not only did that not play a part in the review by these officials, but they covered that up and they put a gag order on the guy and they threatened him again during the election. But Shepard Smith continues to lie about this. He said there was no uranium from Uranium One's U.S. mines that has left the country. That is absolutely false. It was done, and it was done in an illegal, surreptitious way. What they did was they did not notify Congress. They did not go through the legal authorities. That in and of itself is another crime, the way that they did this. Doing it under the table, simply adding some of the uranium to a shipping list, things of list that could be shipped to Canada, and then doing it surreptitiously without telling anybody. And then we are not sure, I guess, exactly where it went from there. And then he doesn't mention at all the FBI's involvement and Mueller's involvement in this, which I just pointed out is one of the key issues and one of the reasons why there should be a special prosecutor. And when he leaves out the FBI issue, then what he is doing is making a case that there shouldn't be any Hillary investigation. Now, we have to know what Bob Mueller, James Comey, Rod Rosenstein did. These are the guys who are running this other investigation. They are the ones who were colluding with Hillary Clinton. Let's hear what Hillary Clinton has to say about this, how outraged she is that her personal privacy would be violated.
As you know, President Trump has tried to flip the script and now says the Justice Department should be investigating
you. Oh, flip the script.
And this week we learned that Attorney General Sessions is considering a special counsel to probe the Uranium One deal and alleged conflicts with the Clinton Foundation. What's your reaction to this?
You know, I regret deeply that this appears to be the politicization of the Justice Department and our justice system. Uranium One story has been debunked countless times by members of the press, by independent experts. It is nothing but a false charge that the Trump administration is trying to drum up in order to avoid attention being directed at them. I mean, even Trey Gowdy, somebody who's hardly a fan of mine, said that there doesn't seem to be the basis for a special counsel. Of course, there isn't. But if I try to take myself out of it, which, you know, is kind of hard because it's personally offensive that they would do this.
Personally offensive.
But taking myself out of it, this is such an abuse of power, and it goes right at the rule of law. As Secretary of State, I went around the world bragging about America's rule of law, that we were a nation of laws, not of men. And, the justice system was blind. And obviously, we were proud of that, but we had to always be vigilant to make sure that it remained so. And if they send a signal that we're going to be like some dictatorship, some authoritarian regime, where political opponents are going to be unfairly fraudulently investigated, that rips at the fabric of the contract we have that we can trust.
It rips at the fabric of the contract that we have. Don't we have, if we're talking about blind justice, how is it that James Comey says Hillary Clinton violated all these national security rules, but I'm not going to do anything about it. Don't you try this, however, and then immediately sends a sailor who took pictures of where he was in a sub for as a souvenir. Those were confidential classifications. That's the lowest level of anything that is classified. You don't to get to classified data, they don't do much of a vetting at all. That is minimal. But that guy is sent to jail. Hillary Clinton, who reveals the most classified information and violates all these laws as a high-ranking government official. You want to talk about blind justice? You want to talk about flipping the script? What we have found with this revelation of the FBI shutting down the investigation, avoiding keeping that from going public so they could get Uranium One approved, and then putting a gag order on this eyewitness, that shows what the real script was. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm David Knight. Welcome back. I'm David Knight. Didn't get a chance to really comment on Hillary Clinton. I heard that clip for the first time as we were playing it, and I was jotting down some notes as she was talking, but we hit the break. I'm going to get back to that in just one moment. Before we do, there was an interesting article on the Drudge Report from the UK Telegraph. They said the Amish may hold the secret to longer life as scientists find an anti-aging gene. And they say they've discovered that older members of the Amish community carry a gene which helps them to live an extra 10 years. They said they found that out of the 177 members of the group, 43 men carried a non-functioning version of this gene. They say it's responsible for making a protein which seems to encourage cell death and the shortening of telomeres. And they have a protective, of course, telomeres, they explain, are the protective cap on the end of the chromosomes, which prevents DNA inside from becoming damaged. Over time, the cap shortens, which causes aging and disease. So these individuals that they found that carried this had telomeres that were 10% longer. And they said, well, that's going to give them another 10 years of life. As we pointed out before, there's been numerous scientific studies that look at the end cap on the DNA. And just think about it as a shoelace, and you twist it into a double, give it a little bit of a twist so that it looks like a double helix. Just visualize that in your mind. And at the end of the shoelace is a little cap, isn't there? Well, that's what's called a telomere on a DNA strand. And they can look at the length of the telomeres in a person, and they can predict what their life expectancy is going to be. I mean, that is unless you get in a car accident or something, your natural life expectancy. Because things start to happen in terms of your immune system breaking down, getting cancer, whatever. A lot of different things manifest as your DNA strands begin to unravel. And that happens as the telomere, as the end cap disappears. That's what we have DNA force for. You can't do anything about not having this gene. But there is something you can do about it. There's been numerous studies of BioPQQ that talk about how this helps to maintain and to the length of your telomere to keep it from disappearing, to slow down that rate of decline that happens naturally over a period of time. They're talking about this. They said, well, you got a longer telomere. That means you're going to get an extra 10 years. BioPQQ, that's in DNA Force, and DNA Force is now back in stock. You can get it 25% off with free shipping. We also have a lot of products that have been held over from our previous sales. We have Z-Shield, 50% off plus free shipping. Caveman, our true paleo formula, that is also 50% off with free shipping. Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink Mix, 50% off with free shipping. Secret 12, our vitamin B12 formula, 50% off with free shipping. And again, DNA Force back in stock, 25% off with free shipping. Now, you know, we listen to Hillary Clinton saying, you have flipped the script. When we realized that the FBI, that Bob Mueller, Rod Rosenstein, James Comey, had known about this investigation, and not only did the Obama administration and all the cabinet officials, including Hillary Clinton, who profited from this, not only did they not shut this down, but they put a gag order on this individual, and they threatened him again during the election last year. Then they became the ones who investigated Russian collusion. And so she says, this whole story about Uranium One, that's been debunked so many times. Why are we still talking about that? Well, why are we still talking about Russian collusion, Hillary? That's been debunked so many times. We've had Democrat leaders who have come out and said, I don't see any evidence of collusion. No, we're not looking at collusion. We're just looking to see what the Russians did. No, they're looking at collusion. That's what Mueller is saying he's doing. That's the basis for his investigation of everybody that was in the Trump campaign. And there is no oversight of this. There is no controlling legal authority, as Al Gore used to say. I pointed out before many times, I'll point it out again today, the special prosecutor law that was created in 1978 expired in 1999. For 18 years, there hasn't been a law. And there isn't a law. And they're not even following the template of that expired law from 18 years ago. There is no oversight, no independent oversight. This investigation has all been about the people who were involved in Uranium One with Hillary Clinton. Rod Rosenstein, Mueller, Comey, all these guys who run the investigation were in Uranium One. And they were in earlier scandals with Hillary Clinton, with the Clinton Foundation, and the things that were done there, as Charles Ortel pointed out a couple of days ago. These amigos of Hillary Clinton, and you had Jeff Sessions, step aside and say, I'm going to let the deputy attorney general pick the special prosecutor. They never trusted one individual to pick a special prosecutor, even when we had the special prosecutor law. The attorney general would review the need for a special prosecutor based on evidence that a crime had been committed. In America, you want to talk about having a rule of law? Well, that means that you don't investigate people, you investigate crimes. And you investigate those crimes and the people that are associated with them, and you get search warrants and things like that when you have evidence and you offer evidence that is specific to the person, to the crime, to the time, to the place, the papers that you want to get. They got that search warrant from the fictional dossier that Hillary Clinton, who bought the DNC, paid to have done. This whole thing is a flipped script. This whole thing is politicized. This whole thing is diversion, distraction. And it is not blind justice. We have debunked the Russian collusion. But as we start to look at Hillary Clinton, we find that there's a lot of stuff that is new in that investigation. Today, coming up in the show, we're going to be talking to Craig Richardson. He's with E&E Legal. And just as we cannot allow this Uranium One deal to go away because of the crime of obstruction and collusion, it was done by the people in the FBI, the Department of Justice, the State Department, and others, as well as the Obama administration. We cannot allow the crime that Barack Obama did by self-ratifying the Paris Climate Treaty. We have to have a rule of law. And so I've got Craig Richardson on later in the program because his organization, E&E Legal, is now suing the State Department to force disclosure of what was being done to put a gag on the people who were upset about the fact that Barack Obama was avoiding the Constitution. I guess I should say he was voiding the Constitution, not avoiding it, and saying, I'm going to self-ratify. He knew that he didn't have the votes to get into the Paris Climate Agreement, but he signed it and pretended that that was sufficient. And they have uncovered emails that show the State Department making efforts to calm down senators and Senate staff who are outraged that Barack Obama would not go through the constitutional process to ratify a treaty, but would just say, I'm going to self-ratify it. This is just too important, so I'm going to do this myself. And we have seen this pattern over and over again. We cannot allow that to stand as a precedent. We cannot allow the crimes of Hillary Clinton, the preferential treatment that she was given by her co-conspirators in the FBI, we cannot allow that to continue. And so there are a lot of people, even though the attorney general seems to be asleep at the wheel, there's a lot of people who are trying to get information, just as we talked to Ty Clevenger, who's trying to get Hillary Clinton and Mueller, Comey, disbarred because of what they have done. Can we at least throw them out of the bar? Can we get some information? That's why these lawsuits are important. So stay with us. When we come up in the next hour, we're going to be talking to Craig Richardson. We're also going to be talking to Shiva Ayadure. He's fed up with the corrupt Republican establishment. He is now running as an independent for Senate in Massachusetts. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
Waging information warfare against pushers of fake news. You're listening to Real News with David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and I'm going to get into the Franken Groper. You know, over the years, I watched Al Franken on Saturday Night Live, and I never really thought he was funny. He was his character was smug, arrogant, elitist. And then over time, especially when he ran for Senate, I realized he wasn't acting. That's who he is. And now as we go back and we look at what he's been doing with women, we see that he is also one of these phony male feminists who are always the worst, aren't they? The ones who say, yeah, we're going to defend women. Oh, I really respect women. Everything I can do to help women. And we're seeing now, aren't we, what their true nature is. And then another disturbing thing that has come out. There's an interview that he did as Saturday Night Live was becoming popular. He was still a writer there, pretty much. And what you see in this is a genuine hatred for homosexuals. Very disturbing, this individual. I hope his political career is over because he is the very definition of a creep if you even agreed with his policies. I tweeted out as this stuff was starting, look at what he was doing, begging social media firms to engage in censorship. You like that? I mean, here's a guy, he's a writer in Hollywood. Oh, I thought these guys were all about free speech and the First Amendment, right? Well, not so much. Not if you produce a documentary about vaccines. All the Hollywood film types, if it's not their politics, boy, they're going to shut that down with censorship. And if you've got some political statements that Al Franken doesn't want out there, then he and his ilk, Democrats especially, in the House and the Senate, calling out InfoWars by name and demanding that Twitter censor any tweets that people are putting out there about InfoWars store. I mean, this is the nature of this guy. So I tweeted out, I said, yesterday before we saw him grabbing breasts, Franken Grober was trying to grab your free speech, and he was trying to rape the Bill of Rights. And what we're looking at here, as I pointed out a couple of days ago, it is crony censorship. He won't come out there and just say, well, we need to get rid of the First Amendment. He would never do that. People would start to wake up if they did that. No, what they do is they set up a public-private partnership to engage in censorship. And I talked about that in depth. I'm not going to go over that again. If you want to see the video, you can go to the tweet. You can find me at Libertarian, and I've got a link to the video, Government Censorship Department, and that was Al Franken the day before this all happened. And then we see the pictures that he put out, and I want to read you his statement here. He said, I respect women. I don't respect men who don't respect women. And then he goes on to say, I don't know what was in my head. There's no excuse. But then he says, I am asking that an ethics investigation be undertaken of me. Even though he says, I know it was wrong, there's absolutely no excuse for what I did, but I want you guys to investigate this and see if I really did anything wrong, you know, as a senator. he said, the truth is, what people think of me, and now he goes back into his virtue signaling male feminist role here. What people think of me in light of this is far less important than what people think of women who continue to come forward to tell their stories. They deserve to be heard and believed, and they deserve to know that I am their ally and supporter. Well, you know what, Al? They don't need your hands to support their breasts. Maybe they don't need the Al Franken bra. This is absolutely amazing. And I tweeted out, I said, here's a guy who's asking for an ethics investigation. Because although he respects women and there is no excuse, he's still not sure if this was ethical or not, you know, for a senator. That's probably the funniest thing that Al Franken has ever written. That apology. I know this is wrong. It's horrible. Women are wonderful. Can somebody do an investigation and tell me if what I did was wrong? Is this something that rises to the level that we should get out of here? And then Roy Moore tweeted out, to point out the double standard here, Roy Moore tweeted out, Al Franken admits guilt after photographic evidence of his abuse surfaces. Mitch McConnell immediately says, well, let's investigate that. Yeah, let's look at that. I mean, we don't know if what he did is wrong, right? So we have to have an investigation to determine, even though we got a photograph, if what Al Franken did is wrong, according to Mitch McConnell. But as Roy Moore says, in Alabama, with no evidence, as a matter of fact, we've got evidence that this smear book from Gloria Allred was totally forged and false. But with no evidence, allegations not proven, Mitch McConnell says Moore must quit immediately, or I will expel him, or I will shut down the election in Alabama. We'll talk about that in a moment. But let's stay focused here on the reactions to Al Franken Groper. NBC's Casey Hunt, Breitbart reports, undermines Franken's alleged victim. She said, that's not actually groping what he was doing. You know, it's just a comedy act. That's not anything bad. She says, this is like, Breitbart points out, John Nolte says, this is something out of the 1990s when the news media did everything it could to undermine President Bill Clinton's female accusers. Isn't it interesting that they're now turning on Bill Clinton's accusers, are turning on Bill Clinton and saying, now I believe Juanita Broderick, after they have trashed her for all of these years, after they called these women who talked about the violent sexual abuse and the rape of Bill Clinton. They called them bimbos. They called Hillary Clinton called it bimbo eruptions. You know what? Hillary, you're the bimbo. You're the bimbo. You're the one who hinged everything on your husband and tried to ride his coattails into the White House as president. Hillary, you're the bimbo. And that would take, if Saturday Night Live really wanted to do something funny, then what they would do is they would take this statement by NBC's Casey Hunt and use this as the basis of a skit. That's really what they should do. But they're not going to do that. But as they point out in this article, it looks like this is an effort to cover this up on the part of NBC, that they've manufactured a false narrative. What she said when she was on MSNBC, Hunt said, and then Franken took a picture, which his office now says was a joke. It's just a joke. It shows him not actually groping, but mock groping her while she was asleep. And, you know, as I wrote to myself, it's like, oh, yeah, it kind of reminds me of Jimmy Savile, you know. Al Franken is he's an advocate for women, like Jimmy Savile was for children in the UK. Jimmy Savile would have parties for the children. Jimmy Savile would go to hospital with the children, and he would abuse the children. And maybe the same thing is happening with Al Franken, because when you look at this, as I try to push away from that groping event and the fact that he loved to take pictures of himself groping women, because, you know, that's just so funny, isn't it? Isn't that funny? Now we see the pictures come up that he did that to Joy Behar, because it was part of Comedy Central. You know, these guys have MOs, don't they? It's very interesting, because when you go back and you look at this 1976 article, it's linked up on the Drudge Report, and they were talking about Saturday Night Live. It was a new program at the time, and it starts out, he says, my advice to Harvard students, he says, is to drop out. This is a guy who got a degree in psychology and something called SOCREL, which is social relations. I had to look this up. I couldn't find anybody other than Harvard that offers a degree in social relations. Social relations. It seems to be unique to them. So maybe the lesson in all this is that you get a, if you get an absolutely irrelevant degree, even if it's from Harvard, it doesn't help you. He says, seriously, if anybody wants to make it in show business, well, it doesn't help at all to go to Harvard. Not at all. Well, maybe, you know, maybe it doesn't. But he goes on to show his hatred for homosexuals. He said he wrote a skit called Semen on Broadway. He said it was rejected from the Hasty Pudding Club by some preppies. He says, well, he says, it's not just that they're preppies, because I'm a preppy myself. I just don't like homosexuals. If you ask me, they're all homosexuals in the pudding. Hey, I was glad when that pudding homosexual got killed in Philadelphia. And they said his smile became so broad that it pushed his eyes shut. And he couldn't stand it any longer. He said, put that in, put that in. I want to see that in print. Yeah, that's Al Franken, your senator from Minnesota. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight. Welcome back. I'm David Knight. We're going to take a look at some more interesting fallout about Al Franken and the response to it, which I find very interesting, the way the press is responding to this as well as Democrats. And then we're going to take a look at some new developments in the race for Senate with Roy Moore and the trial of Senator Bob Menendez. They reached a verdict yesterday. What is going to be happening at this point? Will there be a retrial? Will there be an ethics investigation to see if the charges are true or not? Because there was some serious charges that were not allowed by that judge. So we're going to take a look at that trial as well. Before we get back to the news, I just want to remind you of the products that we have extended on sale. It was part of our 34-hour broadcast that we did last week. Some of these have had to be removed because they've run out of deep stock on them, but we do have some that we have still at 50% off with free shipping. Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink Mix is 50% off with free shipping. So is Secret 12. That's our vitamin B12 formula. You just put it under your tongue, leave it there for about 15 seconds. You'll get the same effect as you would with a vitamin B12 injection, but painlessly, and it's great tasting, actually, also. Also, we have Super Blue Fluoride-Free Mouthwash, 50% off with free shipping. It doesn't have the harmful fluoride that you find in so many dental products. It has instead nanosilver and iodine, and it is great tasting, like the toothpaste. That is 50% off plus free shipping. And we have a new product, Carnivore. It's an all-new enzyme formula. You'll find that at InfoWarsStore.com. And as part of the introduction of this, we have taken 33% off the price. Carnivore is a new digestive enzyme product by InfoWars Life. Digestive enzymes assist in the digestion process. They increase the bioavailability of nutrients by breaking down foods into easily absorbable components. Digestive enzymes also help to prevent discomfort from ingestion, caused by fermentation of undigested food particles in the gut. And it's something these digestive enzymes, like so many other things, they decline over our age. As our age increases, the production of this, like some things like melatonin that help you to sleep, they start to decline. So this is a great way to supplement that. It's a great way to make sure that you're going to fully digest your food, not going to have indigestion. And again, you can get that 33% off. It's Carnivore at InfoWarsStore.com. As we go back to Al Franken, we've seen that whenever he takes a picture of himself groping a woman's breast, it's just a joke. Just give him a pass. And we see now multiple instances of that. We see that MSNBC has a woman trying to defend that. I mean, if Saturday Night Live weren't such political hacks, we'll see what they do with this tomorrow night. And see if they make fun of Al Franken, the darling of the Democrat Party. They'll do a skit with Al Franken and Bill Clinton. Maybe they will. Who knows? Do they have guts to do that? People are starting to criticize Bill Clinton now, and they're starting to talk about Hillary Clinton, how she bought the DNC. Maybe things are going to get pretty dangerous for the two of them when people start to look at the real crimes that they committed, not just the sexual assault crimes, which they used the special prosecutor, Ken Starr, to avoid that. Remember? He talked about consensual sex between Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky, but he avoided the violent sexual assault, the rape charges. Didn't go there. Didn't talk about the crooked financial dealings with Whitewater and other things. He stayed away from the serious charges. He did find some serious charges. I mean, perjury is a serious charge. Obstruction is a serious charge. He was impeached for those two things in the House of Representatives when they went to the Senate for the trial. It was 50-50 on obstruction. The VP gets to cast the deciding vote on that. And it was interesting because some of the people who immediately rushed to judgment on Roy Moore, like Susan Collins, voted for acquittal for Bill Clinton back in the day on all those charges. And now we've got some new stuff that is coming out. In that article I just read you, where he talks about his hatred of homosexuals and said, put that in print. I'm glad those guys died. I really hate homosexuals. Put that in print. Amazing, isn't that? Isn't that? I mean, you know, people look at Roy Moore and his opposition to gay marriage, which was really over the legal authority of the Supreme Court to impose a definition of marriage on the states. They don't have that authority. It's not there. We cannot continue to allow, even if we agree with the outcome, we cannot continue to allow the government to usurp that authority. And so he is standing on a legal basis. And I've, as I said before, many real liberals have said, even though I wanted to see gay marriage, I didn't want to see it done this way. I didn't want to see our rule of law and the Constitution burned down in order to do it. But when you've got somebody like Al Franken, you know, Christians will look at this and say, well, hate the sin, love the sinner. We want to have a better lifestyle for people. We want them to understand that we all struggle with certain things. Some people struggle with drug addiction. It's just, it's in their nature. We all have a sin nature, don't we? And we all struggle with different things. And they'll look at that and say, well, you hate homosexuals. No, this guy really does hate homosexuals. He wants it in print. There's no question about it. And then he goes on to say something else that was also very disturbing. He had written a script where he wanted to parody 60 Minutes. And they said in the article, he suggested that they have one of the guys that was back in that was on 60 Minutes back in the day, Andy Rooney, say, I give pills to Leslie Stahl. And when she passes out, I take her to the closet and rape her. And they didn't go there with that. They thought that was a bit over the top to put Al Franken's joke in on air. And then we have Nancy Pelosi, as NTK Network points out. Media doesn't ask her a single question about Al Franken. Not at all. I would have liked to have had somebody ask her about the $15 million of taxpayer money that paid off a sexual assault crime. Wouldn't you think that the female leader of the minority in the House would be interested in exposing that? There have been at least two settlements of sexual assault by congressmen. One of them resulted in a $15 million payout, and it wasn't from that guy. It was the Congress that was spending $15 million of your money to hide his crime, and they're still hiding it. Why don't they ask Nancy Pelosi about that? I'd like to get some answers about that. So they're starting to turn on Bill Clinton. They're starting to turn on Al Franken. I find that interesting. But let's get this clip from Gloria Allred. And I said when it came out, I put the video up yesterday, I talked about in detail what has been exposed about the lies of her testimony. Remember when Gloria Allred did this to Donald Trump just before the election? And it probably would have taken him down because they were coming up with all kinds of accusations and the sheer volume of them, even though nothing was being proven, the sheer volume of it, the fact that he had never been vetted before in an election, unlike Roy Moore, who has run five times and has been well known there for 40 years in politics as a judge, an attorney, and so forth. It would have taken Trump down, I think, if they hadn't gone back and found an email from her begging to have Trump visit her place of business, to reconnect, as she put it. And that dismissed that. Well, the same thing has happened again now with Gloria Allred. This smear book that they put up there, the yearbook, the alleged signature of Roy Moore, there's a lot of questions about that. And so people are asking Gloria Allred, did you vet this? Here's a clip.
But did she see him sign it?
Did you see him sign her? Him sign the book? Did she see him sign the book?
You know, I don't. I haven't asked her if she saw him, but we did describe what happened that evening in question. That what she alleges was that she put it on the counter. That I think that he asked to sign, or that he did sign it. That's all.
I ask this because it seems like you're not 100% sure that it is his signature. And if you're not 100% sure that it is his signature, why would you show it at a press conference?
Well, why would, you know, why does anybody doubt that it is his signature?
Because I'm Gloria Allred. Why would anybody doubt what I put up there? She tried to take Donald Trump down with phony sexual allegations that at the time were 10 years old, then they found a six-month-old email. We've looked at this yearbook, and let me just remind you of some of the stuff that was on it. The fact that it had multiple handwriting issues. When you look at it, you don't have to be a handwriting analyst to understand that there's issues with his signature not matching his other signatures. The fact that they called it the Old Hickory House and spelled it O-L-D-E, which, according to people, it was never that way. The fact that D.A. was after his name. And as he pointed out, he said he didn't ever sign his name with D.A. He wasn't a district attorney. He was assistant district attorney. But on divorce orders, his assistant had the initials D.A. His name was Delbra Adams, and he would put that on the documents and sign it that way. And he was the judge in this woman's divorce. So why wouldn't she ask for him to be recused if she was so emotionally distraught about that? Here we are 40 years later, 18 years after he presided over the divorce, and yet 22 years after he sexually assaulted her, she didn't even ask for him to be recused. Isn't that interesting? So the judge has asked that they get a chance to examine this yearbook.
From the InfoWars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's The Real News with your host, David Nutt.
Welcome back. You just heard the clip, and that was on MSNBC. With a reporter, and good for her, that was honest reporting, questioned Gloria Allred about the obvious thing. Did you ask your client if she actually saw Roy Moore do this? Why would they ask that? At the first couple of days, it's like, wow, look, he signed it. Well, now we look with just a cursory analysis of the handwriting that was there. You can see that that's not his handwriting. You can see that it's a different name for the place. But most telling, I think, is the fact that the initials D.A. are there. And that was the way that divorce rulings were signed. That was the person who was his clerk. He was never district attorney. He was a deputy district attorney. So it would have been DDA if he would have put that there, but he didn't sign it that way. His clerk, when they entered in the orders, would do it that way. And so it's interesting that she would stand before him for a divorce case 22 years after the alleged violent attempt at rape and not ask for the judge to be recused. But then 18 years later, she would not be able to contain herself as she recounted it, breaking into tears constantly. And so Judge Roy Moore says, we want to examine this. We want to physically examine this. We want to see if this was a forgery. How old was this ink on here? And so he's given an ultimatum to Gloria Allred, 48 hours to release this yearbook. And he is demanding that the evidence be preserved. He says, I want immediate and professional preservation of the yearbook, reasonable but immediate efforts to create and maintain evidence regarding a chain of custody pertaining to all potential evidence. And I want the yearbook to be released to the custody of our expert forensic document examiner within 2 business days of your receipt of this correspondence. I want to play that clip again because it's absolutely amazing to listen to Gloria Allred and how she was taken back by the question, are you really sure that Judge Roy Moore signed this? Here's that interview again.
Anything but his signature.
But did she see him sign it?
I haven't asked her if she saw him, but we did describe what happened that evening in question, that what she alleges was that she put it on the counter, that I think that he asked to sign, or that he did sign it. That's all.
I asked this because it seems like you're not 100% sure that it is his signature. And if you're not 100% sure that it is his signature, why would you show it at a press conference?
Well, why does anybody doubt that it is his signature?
Yeah, why would anybody doubt it? Well, because you're Gloria Allred, and we've caught you doing this thing over and over again. Meanwhile, this is an orchestrated takedown, and let me give you just a couple of examples of this. You know, one of the things that was supposedly damaging this week was they had 3 women come forward, and again, second Washington Post story, saying, he asked me out when I was working in the mall at 18, and I turned him down. Isn't that creepy that somebody that would be 10 or 12 years older than me would ask me out? I mean, that's just unacceptable behavior. Then that was followed up by a woman who said, and it can't be corroborated, it's denied by Judge Roy Moore. She said that he did. He said he didn't. Said he grabbed her behind. But we got George Bush, who has admitted doing this to multiple women. We've now had over a half dozen women come out. One of them was under 16 years old. And nobody is saying anything about George H.W. Bush. Isn't that interesting? He basically says, don't worry. It was a joke. Oh, that's right. The Franken defense. It was a joke. Not a problem. I can grab women by the breast. I can grab them by the butt. It doesn't matter. It's a joke. And they're just the butt of my joke. So it just keeps going on because, you know, if you're Al Franken, you know, he's Al Franken and you're not. He's George H.W. Bush and you're not. And so they can do anything that they want. Nobody is making a big deal out of this. You really got to dig to find out the latest allegations of butt grabbing from George H.W. Bush. But they're not allegations. He admitted it the first couple of times. Just like Louis C.K. admitted it. And said, I should get a pass because, as one of the writers for CNN said, he's true to his art. Same thing that Harvey Weinstein said about convicted rapist and pedophile Roman Polanski. You know, it's a so-called crime. He's done his time. Let's bring him back. You know, these guys are important. We need politicians like this. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Studios in Austin, Texas. It's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight. Absolutely amazing how the false narrative of Gloria Allred is melting down. She goes on MSNBC. I guess she thought that would be safe. And the obvious problems with her client's story, the fact that she would be fine with Judge Roy Moore presiding over her divorce 22 years after the alleged incident, but now she cannot contain her tears as she talks about it. But also the forgeries and the signatures. And the MSNBC reporter says, did you ask her if she saw him sign that? Why would you introduce that in evidence if you're not sure that he's really the one that signed it? Because nobody believes that he signed it at this point. You just do a cursory examination of this thing and the signatures and the other details that have emerged. And I'm not going to go into all of that again. But you can understand, as I pointed out, the fact that George H.W. Bush gets a pass, just like Al Franken, saying, hey, it's a joke when I grab women by the butt. And tell them my favorite book is David Copperfield. Hey, you know, I'm joking. And that makes it all okay. And he's done that about a half dozen times. One of the women was under 16 when he did that. And do you see any outrage about that from Mitch McConnell or from Lindsey Graham or from Mitt Romney? Uh-uh. No, you don't see that at all. And you don't see any outrage towards Menendez. We're going to play you what happened with the trial there. But I just have to say, as we look at the push by the GOP and the fact that we have this poll that came out that says, oh, the Democrats now beating Judge Roy Moore by 12 points. You understand the organization that's putting that poll out is the Republican Senatorial Committee, the same people that spent millions to oppose Judge Roy Moore and other conservatives who, by the way, people like Mo Brooks, who is supporting Judge Roy Moore, they spent a lot of money to defeat Mo Brooks. They spent a lot of money to personally attack Judge Roy Moore before any of these allegations, if you believe them. And so now they're telling us, if you believe them, that there's a poll out that shows him losing by 12 points. And then Fox News jumps in. Fox News comes in with a poll. They had just conducted a poll with 3,000 people, and it showed Roy Moore with a 6-point lead. So they conducted another one to get the result that they wanted and said, well, here's this one that we conducted with 1/5 the number of people, only 600 people, and we showed Judge Roy Moore losing by 8 points. This is a Republican establishment hit. The Democrats are just sitting back and enjoying this. They're hoping that nobody notices that Doug Jones is a Democrat. They're hoping that Chuck Schumer doesn't go to Alabama and remind people of what Doug Jones is going to be doing when he goes to Washington if he wins. And interestingly enough, the Alabama GOP said on Wednesday night, they said the Alabama GOP Steering Committee supports Judge Roy Moore as our nominee. They trust the voters to make the ultimate decision in this crucial race. Judge Moore has vehemently denied the allegations made against him. He deserves to be pressured, presumed innocent. Yeah, pressured. He deserves to be pressured by Mitch McConnell. He deserves to be presumed innocent of the accusations unless proven otherwise, and he will continue to make his case straight to the people of Alabama. That was the Alabama GOP that they are calling on in Washington, saying, take him off the ballot. So that even if he wins, he won't be seated. And we won't have to go through this embarrassing thing of expelling him from the Senate, which is what Mitch McConnell is doing. Don't you see how similar this is to what they did to Trump? Saying that if he wins the primaries, we're going to take him out at the convention. We're going to do a brokered convention. It's all the same people again. And so they come to President Trump, and they ask him the next day. And he basically has his press secretary, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, says essentially what the Alabama party did. We're going to let the people of Alabama make that decision. They're the ones who should make it. They're going to try him in the court of public opinion. Then let the election be the judge and jury. And we're going to take a look at the crooked accusations against them. But let's take a look at what happened to Bob Menendez, the senator. He got a hung jury. He did not get acquittal. He did not get conviction. He's now saying that this only came up because he's Hispanic. I hadn't even noticed that he was Hispanic, quite frankly. I hadn't even thought about it. But they say that the charges were brought. This is the New American. The charges were brought by the Department of Justice, and they look persuasive. You know, these are charges that were not brought by Trump's Department of Justice, but by Obama's Department of Justice. Kathleen Sebelius, who is at Health and Human Services, a Obama HHS appointee, was the one that was also making cases about this. Here's what he was charged with. They say that Menendez intervened with Medicare in order to keep his friend, a very wealthy doctor, from returning some $9 million in excessive reimbursements. They say that Menendez pressured federal officials to protect a port security contract held by a company in the Dominican Republic. They said Melgen, this doctor, is a citizen there, and he is a major investor in the company, that he pressured federal officials from putting that out to bid. So he wanted this to go straight to him. They said that he was paid off by Melgen with various favors, including trips on Melgen's private jet, which he failed to report as required by the Senate. They also alleged that and charged him with making substantial high six-figure contributions to the reelection campaign. They said that he bribed federal officials, committing fraud, making false statements in the process, and more. They had both the doctor and Menendez on trial. One of the things that was not allowed to be put in there was that he was having sex with underage prostitutes. But here's what Judge Napolitano says about this particular trial.
He faces a lot that's coming. The first is a decision by his former Senate colleague, Jeff Sessions, who's now the Attorney General, and it would actually go to that level as to whether they want to retry a sitting senator. They've spent several million dollars in the prosecution. They defended their case three times in the Federal Court of Appeals. It'd be difficult for me to see them just dropping this hot potato right now. But I think the most troubling thing for him is the Senate ethics investigation, because the Senate Ethics Committee can look at allegations against Senator Menendez, which Judge Walz, the judge in the case, would not let the jury hear. And some of those are very lurid and are in the area of sexual activity with underage females.
Okay, so that's that's one aspect that was not allowed by the judge. And then we had the jury, who, after listening to testimony of this long list of charges I just read to you, bribery, corruption, money laundering, and, well, he didn't hear the charges about sex with underage prostitutes, but they heard those other charges. And their response at the end of it, one of the jurors said, "What is a senator?" That was the question that came out of the jury. So as Judge Napolitano points out, now the question is, will they retry him? Or will they have the ethics committee look at this? If the ethics committee looks at this, all of that stuff is on the table. And these are people who know what a senator is. They're senators. So I don't know if politics is going to play a part in it, but there will be a full reckoning of all the evidence, not excluded like it was by that particular judge. Menendez had something very interesting to say, though. And I think as we look at this, it is something to think about, because we have seen this happen in various trials. We see it going on right now in the Bundy trial. We've seen it go on in the trial of Ross Ulbricht and many others. When the government wants you, they will pull all the strings to get you. Here's what Senator Menendez said after the hung jury.
I've also learned about the incredible weight and power of the federal government and how it can crush you if it wants to. What office or department of the federal government gives me back the past 2.5 years of my life? Where do I go to have the damage they sought to incur to my reputation? Where is it? What department is it that replaces it?
What federal department do I go to get back my life, to get back my reputation? You know, quite frankly, Bob Menendez is a hardcore socialist, but that is one lesson that he learned that might actually even qualify him for being a senator. How many senators have seen the government come after them and the full force of the government? If he's innocent, boy, he would be a good senator if he would apply that to other people. I don't think he's innocent, though. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight, and we're going to be joined by Shiva Ayadure, who does want to be a senator and is running as an independent now. Welcome back. I'm David Knight. We're going to be talking to Dr. Shiva Ayadure. He is running for Senate in Massachusetts. And the interesting thing is that he has declared his independence from the Republican Party. He was running as a Republican. And it's going to be interesting to find out why he left, why he declared his independence. I have an idea. As we look at what has happened over the last few months, we have seen Mitch McConnell and his Senate leadership campaign fund spend 150 times more against conservatives than they have against Democrats. And that would be before any of the allegations in Alabama. They spent a lot of money against Roy Moore. They spent money against Mo Brooks, who is also running in the primaries. They don't want any real conservatives there. Separate and apart from whatever you think about these allegations, what has surfaced is the actions of Mitch McConnell and others. And now they're running push polls in Alabama against Judge Roy Moore. So they had an event, and Dr. Shiva Iyadure declared his independence. They've got some T-shirts there. Declare your independence. The establishment is one. The Democrats and the Republicans profit from war and from sickness. So we'll be getting to Dr. Shiva Iyadure soon. Before we do, real quickly, I want to remind you of the sales that we had that we have extended. 50% off plus free shipping. We have Secret 12, our vitamin B12 formula, 50% off plus free shipping. Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink Mix, 50% off plus free shipping. Super Blue Fluoride Free Mouthwash, 50% off with free shipping. We also have Caveman and Z-Shield, both of those 50% off with free shipping. Take a look at the reviews that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. See what other people are saying about it. This is a third-party review system. We don't curate those reviews. Somebody else does that, so you can see what people think about that. And it's a great time to try it or to stock up. It's 50% off plus free shipping. We also have a new product, Carnivore, an all-new enzyme formula at InfoWarsStore.com. Now 33% off as part of the introductory price. And what this has is a supplementation of digestive enzymes that assist in the digestion process. They increase the bioavailability of nutrients because they help your body to break down the food that you have. And if your body can't digest that food, what it does is it causes fermentation, and it causes indigestion as well as very uncomfortable gas. So what you can do is to supplement your natural enzymes with this, it is a great way to make sure that you're going to get the best out of your food as well as not become uncomfortable with what you eat. So it's called Carnivore. It's a new product, 33% off the introductory price. You can find that at InfoWarsStore.com. All right, we have Dr. Shiva Iyadure, who's ready to join us. Again, he's U.S. Senate candidate in Massachusetts, running against Pocahontas, and he was running as Republican. Now he is running as an independent. Thank you for joining us. What's that? Keep going? Okay. We don't have him ready yet. All right, so let's go to another article here, because I want to get into what the Pope was saying about people who are climate deniers being perverse. But before I do, I want to talk about an article that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. CNN calls unborn children a special interest group and says they're just kind of like citrus farmers. Why would they make this strange comparison with citrus farmers? Well, it turns out that in this latest tax reform bill, there is a clause there that would allow parents to begin saving for a child's college before they're born. So once you become pregnant, you can start saving for your unborn child. You're going to open up a 529 savings account in the name of the child before they're born, and then you can change the names of the beneficiaries later. You could do it before you know what the sex of the child is. And so CNN comes out and calls these modifications, lists this as a modification and as potential sweeteners into the bill. They lump this together with, they said this is coming from lawmakers and industries, and they include citrus farmers, alcohol producers, and as we point out in the article, in a display of their indifference to the horrors of abortion, they even include unborn children. What they said in this, they said, the idea that life begins at conception is a radical idea. Spokesperson for NARAL, Pro-Choice America, said the sole purpose of this provision in the tax code is to codify the radical anti-choice idea that life begins at conception, to codify that into law, and to begin the process of banning all abortion altogether. You know, we don't want to have anything that would have us look at the heartbeat of a child, or to look at the survivability of a child, or to consider the pain. Do they feel any pain? Don't want to have any of those types of considerations. And, you know, you can be tried for murder if you kill an unborn child. A pregnant lady was killed in the Texas church shooting, and they counted her unborn child as one of the victims of that killer. So it does highlight the lies that we have built into Roe v. Wade, which, by the way, folks, it is not the law of the land. It is a Supreme Court decision, and they don't make law. All right, joining us now, we do have him on the line now, is Shiva Iyadure, who has gone independent as a candidate for Senate in Massachusetts. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Ayadure.
Great to be here, David. How are you?
Doing good. I think I've got an idea as to why you want to go independent, but tell us, in your own words, why you have now declared that you're independent instead of a Republican in the race for Senate in Massachusetts, U.S. Senate.
Well, I think the fundamental reason, David, is both of these parties are rigged systems. Everyone knows that. And if you look at what President Trump's doing, he's not only trying to get his policies passed, but he's having to fight the swamp in D.C. But one of the interesting things is Massachusetts is many ways a sewer that feeds the swamp in D.C. All the quote-unquote elite intellectuals come out of here. And what we've noticed is, you know, we've been running an amazing campaign. We were the first to announce on the Republican Party. We've been eviscerating the establishment Republicans and also Elizabeth Warren, the fake Indian. And we've been building such a movement. But the reality is the establishment Republican mass GOP, and I want to distinguish the mass GOP from the broad base of Republicans, because the mass GOP does not want a guy like me even on the ballot. And 4 years ago, they did the same thing to a very good conservative engineer by the name of Mark Fisher. They made sure that he was ousted out of the state convention and never even got on the ballot. He sued and actually won against the mass GOP. Now, since then, the swamp creatures have actually gotten a lot more better at doing this. So they don't want independence. They don't want people to essentially build a broad-based movement against Senator Warren, because in many ways, David, they're in collusion with her. They're going to throw a softball.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
She's going to throw a softball to them. And the reality is, you know, there's a video that we put out. You know, we as a people need to declare our independence, because the founders of this country never wanted political parties. They're basically monopolistic corporations who survive for their own interests. And it has nothing to do with the people. So I don't want to basically, we dumped the Republican Party because I don't want them to ride on my coattails. Because until I got into this race, David, they were essentially assuming that Elizabeth Warren was winning. And I'm the one who made the race quite interesting for them. So we don't really want to give all of our power to them when they have no interest in essentially supporting our candidacy in any way.
Yeah, you know what they do, and you're pointing out, they don't really have any fundamental disagreement with Elizabeth Warren on the important issues. They're going to pick some wedge issues and try to make a distinction on those. Abortion is one of them that I just talked about. So the Republicans will talk about abortion, but they won't really do anything about it because they want that issue to continue to remain. When it comes to the issues of warfare and welfare and the surveillance state and the Patriot Act, there is no difference on those issues. Stay with us. We're going to be right back with Dr. Shiva Ayadure.
Let me be very clear. What we're doing today is we are dumping the Republican Party. Okay? We are dumping the Republican Party. You can raise those up. The Republican Party doesn't deserve you, and we're dumping them, and we're going independent today. I gave them a shot, you know? I did. I gave you guys a great shot if you're listening out there. Charlie Baker, Mass GOP. We're not dumping the Republican people or the Democrat. There's a lot of nice people who've been bamboozled by these people. Absolutely. On both parties. Yes. We're going to bring them together. We're going to give them a home, right? And they deserve that. So let's go out there and declare our independence. Thank you.
All right, that is Shiva Ayadure, Dr. Shiva Ayadure. And you can find him at shivaforsenate.com. That's S-H-I-V-A, the number 4, and senate.com. As you just heard there, he has declared his independence. He's been running for Senate in Massachusetts. He declared as a Republican candidate, but now he says he wants to be independent of the party system. And we've seen this playing out in the last week or so, haven't we? There is a civil war that is going on in the Republican Party. Right now, the proxy in that civil war is what's going on with Roy Moore in Alabama. You have to understand that even before any of these allegations, regardless of what you think of these allegations, we have serious reasons to question this. But regardless of what you think of these allegations, the Republican establishment had spent $30 million to defeat him in the primaries, to keep their lobbyist candidate who had a lot of ethical issues who was appointed by a governor who subsequently had to resign. They spent $30 million to get this guy, keep him from running. And they also spent money against other conservatives in Alabama, like Mo Brooks, who is now endorsing Roy Moore. They spent 150 times more just with their Senate leadership fund, 150 times more against the conservatives in Alabama and a couple of other races than they have against Democrats who are running for Senate. That's what the GOP is doing. They do not want to have people who are going to stand for liberty, who are going to stand for small government. They do not represent the desires of the vast number of Republican voters out there. That's why it's so important when we look at the primaries. But you can see what happens even when you beat them at the primary. So we're talking to Dr. Shiva Iyadure. Tell us a little bit, Dr. Iyadure, about what you're going to do there, because we know how rigged this system is. I worked with the Libertarian Party years ago because I didn't want to be part of these two establishment parties. It's so much harder, even as an independent, to get on the ballot in most places than it is to get on as a third party. And they have really rigged the process to keep anyone other than their two parties in. We would have situations where, in some jurisdictions, the Republican candidate wouldn't file. And so it was going to be a two-way race between a Libertarian and a Democrat. And so the Republicans would go in after the filing date. They would go into the judge and say, can you set aside that election requirement there? And the judge would say, yeah, sure, we have a requirement. We want to make sure that we the people have a choice. So we'll put you on the ballot. We won't even hold you to the regulations that you failed to observe.
Yeah, David, I think you're bringing up a really, really good point. I think you talked about centralization versus decentralization. Both of these parties want to centralize power. If there's a darkness, that's what it comes from. Nature teaches us everything is decentralized. You just have to look at how nature's organized. And what's fascinating about Massachusetts is I think we have an incredible opportunity here to smash that notion because, you know, the revolution, the first shots were fired in Massachusetts. And if you think about it, Harvard University single-handedly is in many ways the epicenter of the sewer that feeds that swamp I keep talking about. Think about Harvard University. It's graduated Mitt Romney, Elizabeth Warren, what taught there, she didn't graduate there, and Charlie Baker. And if you look
at Al Franken. Al Franken graduated from there. Al Franken got a degree in social relations. You've got 4 degrees. You got a bachelor's degree in electrical engineering, another one in computer science. Then he got a master's degree in mechanical engineering and was a visual studies. But still, you know, it's like he got a degree from Harvard in social relations. So we can kind of see the difference in resumes there. But go ahead. You're making a great point about how it is a center of corruption. And we have seen this in the trials against Aaron Schwartz and others.
Exactly. If you look at Harvard University, fundamentally, it's given rise to the swamp creatures who essentially think that they're actually contributing to human society. I'm not saying there's not some good people there, but fundamentally, it's a big contrast from the high-tech workers that MIT generates. And if you look at the results in Massachusetts, just the facts, one of the biggest public integrity organizations rated Massachusetts the worst in corruption, which means these politicians are really good. Worst in public integrity, worst bested corruption. It has the 47th worst public infrastructure, subways, highways, et cetera, and 3 times the national average in opioid addiction. That's what Harvard has delivered. And on top of that, Harvard represents itself as a university. It's actually a fake university that's fundamentally running as a hedge fund, $45 billion hedge fund that does not pay a dollar in taxes. David, if you and I started a hedge fund, we'd at least be paying 20 to 25%. So one of the slogans that emerges out of this is in fairness. It's about fairness. And that fairness is let's tax Harvard. And there's a bunch of stuff that emerges when you break away from this two-party system. You know, half of the judges on the Supreme Court are Harvard graduates. And if you think about it, several years ago when people wanted term limits, they're the ones who overruled it. So these guys are part of this entire infrastructure which wants to maintain power over two parties. So one of the slogans that we put out there is term limits now, and also $1, one vote. What that means is in Massachusetts, 4.3 million registered voters. That means if you're running for federal office, you should not spend more than $1 per vote, which means $4.3 million. Elizabeth Warren spent close to $100 million last year. You know, the Republicans spent close to $100 million. So why do you need so much money? Because you don't have a message. You're not really resonating with the masses. So you have to pummel them with massive TV advertising. The other thing we've talked about is let's really end student loans. What we mean by that is there's not an open market when it comes to student loans. If you and I started a business, David, and we try to get a business loan, the local business would say, hey, David, show me your business plan, Shiva. Let's look at it. Let's look at your projections. And then they make a decision based on actual due diligence. When they give student loans today, they're not asking that student, hey, what kind of study are you taking? Or you're taking the philosophy of armadillos. Well, that's really not going to get you a job. And yet they give predatory loans to these students. The parents think they need to get these loans. So you have $1.3 trillion in outstanding student loans. And you know what? None of them are going to be able to pay it. And we're going to, again, bail out these banks who are making record profits. So my view is it's not about taking away responsibility, but let's equalize the market, because Bush passed a law that students cannot default. But the reality is I, as a bank, as a business, in an open market, should make very clear decisions. Right now, they're just giving away loans like they used to write the housing loans. And we're on the verge of a massive bubble there. The other big thing we also brought out is no to Monsanto, you know, no to GMOs. You know, we want real food. The Republicans or Democrats do not want to do that. So when we say declare your independence, we're saying the establishment is won. They profit from war and sickness and, frankly, addiction. You know, Mitt Romney made $750 million from aggregating methadone clinics and flipping it. So these guys essentially create swamp economies. And a guy like me, who's done the MIT thing, started companies, you know, I'm really representative of what the people really want. And I think we're going to have a gangbuster time at this. And we have a huge opportunity not only to defeat Elizabeth Warren, but also to start a wave in this country. Hey, it's okay to go independent and you can win, because it's about the message. And I think people are tired of the nonsense. And I think, you know, the day after we broke away, we're almost polling at around 28 to 30%. The other Republicans are 28 to 30%. What's fascinating is the votes that we're getting, however, are going to be all the people who are pinching their nose and voting for Warren, and that we're going to get a lot of the Trumpers. So this is going to be a fascinating election to watch, but we have to declare our independence, David, from both of these parties. What you're describing about with the Roy Moore situation is, you know, these people are weaponizing sex. That's what they're fundamentally doing. And they can use it as they want, but let their guys get away when they want.
Hang on. We're going to come right back to Dr. Shiva Iyaduray, who has declared his independence, telling you how important that is. And, you know, Mitt Romney is a perfect example of how there is no difference between the single party. We were going to get Obamacare or we were going to get Romneycare in 2012. They had it covered both ways. That was their central issue. I'm David Knight. We'll be right back. Welcome back. We're talking to Dr. Shiva Iyaduray. And of course, I've interviewed him in the past. He's the inventor of email. He's a polymath. He's a world-renowned systems scientist, inventor, entrepreneur. He's a chairman and CEO of a company called Cytosolve that models complex diseases. He's got multiple technical degrees from MIT. Very interesting man. He's running for Senate in Massachusetts. You can follow him and follow his campaign. Donate to it at Shiva4Senate. That's S-H-I-V-A, the number 4, Senate.com. Shivaforsenate.com. He was talking to us about the fact that he has now gone independent of the Republican Party. He's running in a race against Elizabeth Warren, Pocahontas, and he is now running as an independent. And so that is a very interesting move. He understands what a good old boy network it is. And we can see this. We can see how Mitch McConnell is going to try to shut down conservatives across the country. The Senate leadership campaign is not about that. It's about it's not about getting Republicans in Senate. It's about preserving Mitch McConnell's leadership of the Republican Senate. And they don't even care if the Republicans have the majority in the Senate as long as Mitch McConnell is the leader of the Republicans, in my opinion. We can see this from the various races going on across the country, not just in Alabama. And Dr. Iyaduray, as you were talking about the interconnected network in Boston, it was just a couple of weeks ago that I talked to the wife of Dana Gottesfeld, who is in prison right now, waiting trial, because he was trying to stop what many people have alleged, not just in the case that he was involved in, but in other cases of medical kidnapping at Boston Children's Hospital that is there with Harvard. And when they came to trial, what they saw there was a very interconnected web of influence there. They saw a conflict of interest in the judiciary. So it is a very corrupt system there in Massachusetts. But tell us about your running for independent there? Was there one specific incident, or was it just that as you worked with the GOP, you realized that it was a network of good old boys and you were not part of that?
Well, David, I think it was a series of incidents, you know, where you add them up and you realize that this is a setup. One of the incidents was that we learned that in 2014, there was a conservative guy by the name of Mark Fisher who ran on the GOP to go against Charlie Baker, who is now the governor. In 2014, he goes to the state convention. In order to get on the ballot, not only do you have to get 10,000 signatures, but you also have to get 15% of the delegates who attend a convention to vote for you, to get on the ballot. And that convention typically occurs in April. So there'll be one in April 2018. Well, this guy Fisher goes to the convention, we found out. He had 600 delegates pledged to him of the 2,000 who were attending the convention, which is 30%. And, you know, he didn't think this was going to be an issue. Well, guess what happens, David? He goes to the convention and he mysteriously gets only 14.9%. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And people say there was shredding of ballots taking place. They do everything in pencil. So that's one incident. The other incident that we saw, David, was we were going out to the Republican town committees, getting standing ovations, people supporting us, and the mass GOP didn't even bother contacting us. And we also started noticing that the liberal mainstream media, the Globe and the Herald, which claims to be a little more non-liberal, would include pictures of the other three candidates and leave us out. So we started eviscerating them. So you see what I'm saying? So that's what started the collusion. So I didn't want to be holding my hands in my pockets in April 2018 and saying, oh man, they screwed us, right? So, you know, we're not stupid, right? So we decided we're not going to play their game. And why give them all of our publicity? Because we're the ones bringing in some amazing voters on both the quote unquote left and right. The other thing that you've talked about here, David, is this collusion. And, you know, this is why we need to tax Harvard. And when we say that, we need, here's an institution, which is a $45 billion hedge fund, and all of these career politicians and are in one way, one step removed from that institution, judges, politicians, lawyers, all of them. And, you know, interesting enough, down the street, as I mentioned, Massachusetts was rated worst in infrastructure, great in corruption, worse in opioid addiction. But MIT has produced 33,000 businesses, David. $2 trillion in revenue per year get generated from those high-tech workers down the street, the quote-unquote nerds. Well, isn't it about time that a high-tech blue-collar worker like me represents a state which is essentially rated number one in innovation? So I think we have a huge opportunity here. The other big thing, the reason that we went independent is we recognize that, you know, when you look at my policies, David, and what you or I and pretty much anyone listening, anyone who's a rational human being, it's not left, it's not right, it's not Democrat, it's not Republican. It's about fairness, right? That's what we're all coming together about. It's not fair that we have open borders. We should have proper immigration. I mean, I would even argue that there's people who are on welfare who do not work, have two or three wives or girlfriends, whatever, smoking, whatever they want to do all day on all sorts of drugs. Those people do not contribute anything to our economy. I mean, what's really an American? An American is one who works hard. In fact, I would even argue there are probably some quote unquote illegal immigrants who actually work for a living. Maybe we should do a visa exchange program between those people who are actually working, those who don't. So this really comes down to fairness, David. So we need strong borders, right? Anyone who's against that is not about fairness. We need to tax Harvard. We need to have term limits. We need to end the predatory practices of student loans. And we need to unleash innovation in Massachusetts, David, for every 17 skilled job openings. Get this, only one person is skilled. So in the mecca of this educational industrial complex, the career politicians and the academic elite have not produced enough people to take on these skilled jobs. And this
I think it's going to be very important for you to run as an independent, because as you're pointing out, the way that they rigged this this convention in the last election, making sure that the non-establishment candidate was not going to be there. They can do anything that they want. You talked about how they got handwritten ballots and they got pencils and so forth. They are private clubs. That's what people need to understand about the Republicans and the Democrats. They are private clubs, and they have upheld this over and over again. Hey, they get to make their own rules. They can do whatever they want. We can't interfere in that. And we can see it on the Democrat side with Hillary Clinton buying the Democrat Party. They were running into debt under Obama candidacy, and she comes in with tens of millions of dollars and buys them and says, now we're going to run this organization and we're going to tell you what to do. And that's what happens in the Republican Party. People have now seen how Hillary Clinton did it, but they don't understand that this is going on in the Republican Party as well. It's going on nationally in the Republican Party with people like Mitch McConnell, and it is going on at every state level in the Republican Party. They're independent. And there's not going to be, if they rig the situation and they rig it against Bernie Sanders, there's no criminal charges are going to be brought against them. It's not a crime. They're a private organization. They can do what they want.
Yeah, and I think the bottom line is, David, what you said is the key. These are private clubs. Everyone needs to understand that. So what they do is they suck in people, everyday working people, to join one of these parties. They bound the discussion. Pro-abortion, anti-abortion, pro-transgender, non-transgender. They have like five issues, David, and they forget.
And you got a lot of issues you just mentioned that you're never going to hear them talk about, Republicans or Democrats. So they confine it to the same issues. It's one of the things that makes the presidential debates so boring. It's always a small, finite set of issues that you're allowed to talk about. Everything else is off the table, even things like the Patriot Act or Surveillance Act. That is off the table. They only talk about a select number of issues.
Yeah, so they limit the discussion, and within that discussion, they give you quote-unquote democracy to talk within that. But no one wants to talk about the apparent conflicts of interest that take place with institutions like Harvard. The MIT president just sent out a letter to all the alumni saying, isn't it horrible there's a bill in Congress, potentially we could be taxed for our endowment. Well, why aren't you taxed? Because you guys are running a private hedge fund, and the university is just a front end for it. So if you think about Elizabeth Warren, she works at a fake university, in many ways is supporting a fake Indian. And that's what's really going on. And I think I'm excited. You saw the emotion in that room. People are just pissed off and tired. And the really good thing, David, is people like Trump, the rebels are out there and they don't know what to do. Even Donna Brazile, right? She did come out because enough people, these people start pissing off that people say, forget it. Why should I?
Well, I can tell you that I've covered a lot of political events, and usually there's nobody there except the candidate, his immediate staff, and a couple of people from the press if they even bother to show up. You don't see for even a state Senate race, you don't see a crowd like the one that you had there, and you certainly don't see their enthusiasm. When people saw tens of thousands show up for President Trump, that was unbelievable as well. But at a Senate level, you just don't see the kind of excitement that you had there. Now, you've got to get on the ballot. We've only got about a minute left. Is that going to be a very expensive, difficult process to get on the ballot, or is it even easier to get on the ballot as an independent than to get through this bureaucracy in the party?
Well, independent, we got to get 10,000 signatures, David. So we'll go get 20,000 just to be safe because, you know, they'll try to likely screw us and try to throw away half of them. So we're going to get 20,000 signatures. That's not a hard thing to do. We have ground team out there. We're using some amazing technology that I actually built, David, on our line. So when people give us money, we're not going to go waste it on consultants. Our goal
is
election the right way as Americans. So Shiva for Senate is where people should go. Give us $5, $10. It's not about money, but it's about building a movement. That's what we're about, and that's what this country needs. We need to declare our independence from both of these parties.
All right, we're out of time. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Shiva Iyadure. That is Shiva, the number 4, Senate.com. That is a great movement they've got going there. Take back your independence. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
In Texas, it's David Knight.
Keep on dying. Welcome back. I'm David Knight. We're going to have in this next hour, we're going to talk to Craig Richardson. He is with E&E Legal, Environment and Energy Legal. He's the president there, and he's going to be talking to us about their efforts to go back and review what President Obama did by saying he's going to self-ratify the Paris Climate Treaty. You can't do that. We have a constitution. In the first couple of years, President Obama was saying, there's certain things I can't do because we've got a constitution. He actually taught constitutional classes. He knows what the law is. But after a while, he said, I can't get this from the Republicans, so I'm just going to do whatever I want. A good example of that is what happened with the Paris Climate Agreement. There are people who are still working very hard to get us back into that agreement. People even in the Trump administration, they were working for a long time to delay us getting out of that. But of course, since it had no effect as a treaty, It wasn't a legal treaty. All President Trump had to do was to say, well, I'm not going to honor that agreement. Quite frankly, President Trump was bound to say that he was not going to honor that agreement because it wasn't legal. It wasn't legally binding. He could not honor that agreement. It would have been a crime for him to do so. It was a crime for Obama to do so. And now, as part of their discovery in that lawsuit, they have found emails where they were tamping down protests with the Senate and the Senate staff saying, you can't do this. The Constitution says the Senate has to ratify these treaties. You can't just say you're going to self-ratify. It's very important that we do this. And we're going to talk to Craig Richardson at the bottom of the hour about this. Let's take a look at the news. We have California officials saying that the shooter in this most recent shooting, the guy who went on a rampage, remember, he attacked his neighbors. He had been put in jail for attacking his neighbors. He had stabbed them previously. And they let him back out again, just like they did the guy in Texas. The government does not lock away violent criminals. They lock away people who smoke marijuana. Remember when they put in mandatory minimums and giving people a decade in jail because they were smoking marijuana in some cases, never had any previous offenses, never did anything violent to hurt anybody, but because they possessed marijuana, that was a threat to the system on many levels. And so they started locking them away in prison, and they didn't have enough jail cells. So they started releasing violent criminals so they could lock up the nonviolent marijuana offenders. And that is something that we see again with this particular incident. But there's something different about this one. The California officials are saying this guy was not allowed to buy guns. And he didn't even do it in the black market. Instead, he made his own guns now. They're saying the shooter made his own guns. These firearms, they said, were manufactured illegally, we believe, by him at his home. So they were obtained in an illegal manner, but not through a legal process. They are not registered. So we've seen a couple of incidents here. We've seen a failure of the system to protect people in the case of the Sutherland Springs church shooting in Texas. We've seen an individual who was very violent, who had even cracked the skull of his toddler son and his former wife, beaten both of them. He had been put in an insane asylum. He had tried to smuggle guns on the Air Force base. He had threatened other officers. And they put him in jail for only a year. They failed to record all of this so that he would be denied purchasing these firearms legally. They allowed him to purchase them. This guy, who did have violent convictions in his past, made the weapons himself. But Joe Biden says that heroes like the one in Texas at that church who had an AR-15, who stopped the killer who was armed with an AR-15, who was shielded with body armor. But the good guy, who is a former NRA certified instructor, still an NRA member, you know, they say the NRA's got blood on its hands. That good guy should not be allowed to have an AR-15. Remember, we played that clip yesterday. It was an NBC news event. It was kind of a town hall. And Joe Biden was answering questions. And one lady there said, well, the hero who stopped this killing had an AR-15. And he said, they shouldn't have had it. I'm real proud of the fact that I shut down assault weapons. We had an assault weapon ban. It expired, but we need to bring that back. The good guys shouldn't have guns. Well, let's understand that the bad guys will even make them if they need to. There will be a very big black market. That's why I brought in marijuana, because they haven't been able to stop that. Over 46 years of a drug war, they're not going to be able to stop guns either. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
You found it. It's the real news. Live from the Infowars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight. You know, there were a couple of articles in the top of the news today that had to do with airplanes, and we're coming up to the busiest travel day of the year. But both of these articles made me think back to 9/11 as well. They show some interesting things about our airline security that we have, both at the individual commercial level and our defense security, NORAD. Both of these articles bring up some interesting questions about it. And when we look at this, I cannot help but go back whenever I look at some airport security issues, go back to look at 9/11 and then look at the phony security theater that they have put in everywhere with the TSA and other issues. This particular story, could terrorists hack an airplane? Well, the government just did. This is a story from the Daily Beast. They say, could terrorists hijack an airliner reportedly and remotely hacking into its cockpit controls and put its fate into their hands? Well, yes. They say the question is being asked because Department of Homeland Security just did that. They hacked into the avionics of a commercial airplane that was parked at an airport as part of a test. So all of these draconian security measures that were put in at airports after 9/11 to keep somebody from hijacking an airplane, which was the official story, and flying them into a building and causing three steel skyscrapers to collapse directly into their footprint, even though only two of them were even hit by one of these airplanes. I mean, that's part of the issue with 9/11. And they were able, as part of their hijacking, to fly the Pentagon plane at a speed that flight simulators and flight instructors who have flown these planes, trained people on these planes for decades, said you can't fly that plane that low, that fast. The lower you are, the thicker the environment is, and it puts limits on how fast you can fly a plane. They said, well, you look at the radar there, you can't fly a plane that low, as they're telling us happened at the Pentagon. Of course, there's no surveillance footage showing the plane flying in and hitting the building, even though there are cameras everywhere at the Pentagon. No, we don't have any footage. As a matter of fact, there might have been some footage, some nearby businesses, but that was confiscated, and we've never, ever seen that. 16 years later, we haven't seen it. So when you look at this and we say, well, could somebody hack into this? Of course they could. People can hack into your cars right now. They don't have all the controls that they're going to put on the controls as they move them into a quote-unquote autonomous mode where they ban human drivers. They're putting more and more systems on there, but you can hack into cars all the time. It's been demonstrated over and over again at the hacking conferences. Very easy to get into the cars. That's one of the things that we should be very concerned about with cars. But we should be concerned about that with airplanes as well. And it kind of makes this whole security theater even more absurd, doesn't it? Because if they can hack in electronically into the avionics of the planes and fly them and take them over, and yes, they can. And yes, that could have been done in 2001. Many people have suggested that that was possibly one of the things that was done to take away the original planes or whatever happened. There's a lot of theories about what happened. But we can certainly look at the official story and know what did not happen. They have told us a lot of things happened on 9/11 that are impossible. So a lot of people started theorizing about what could have happened. But I think this is very interesting. I've always thought it was very interesting as well, even the phone calls and that we were told had happened. The fact that for a decade or so after that, they banned people using their cell phones. You can't do that. That might crash the plane. It's like, really? Because I know that when I did not obey their orders, I could not get a cell phone signal. You can't. You're going too fast through the cells, and you're too high. You're too far away, and so forth and so on. Maybe they didn't want people trying to use their phones or even putting them in airplane mode because they know that you can't make a phone call. And if people were constantly trying to make phone calls and they said, well, you know, these phone calls, you can't do that on a plane. I mean, there's just so many different aspects of it. But now all of a sudden it's become safe. You know, quite frankly, if you stop and think about it, if that was going to keep the airplane from working, then they wouldn't be able to take off, would they? I mean, there's a lot of cell phones and Wi-Fi networks all over the airport, all over the city. They got to fly through and land with all of that electronic chatter that's going on. So if your little phones were causing a problem, they would never be able to get off of the ground. But now there is a real problem, and people really can. They've demonstrated it as a proof of concept. And it's interesting, I think, that they would even put this out. What do we make about that? Is this the beginning of some kind of a attack? It's like, oh, see, we told you that people could hack into the avionics and do something, so we're not going to blame our phony security for something happens, and we're not going to say that it was a false flag. Another thing that I thought was interesting was this story that's on Drudge Report about airliners and F-15s involved in a bizarre encounter with mystery aircraft over Oregon. And they go through a long story here about Reddit, somebody talked about, and they put up air traffic control, and they said there was a very fast-moving object that was not did not have any call signals on it They didn't even show up on radar, but they had all these people making visual contact with it, so much so that NORAD scrambled jets to go up there. And as I'm looking at that and thinking about how quickly NORAD reacted to that, again, it takes me back to 9/11. And the fact that Gore Vidal said, I knew that 9/11 was phony because my father had been involved in the creation of NORAD. He was one of the lead people involved in its creation back in the 1950s, part of the Cold War. It was a very sophisticated defense system, and to say that these planes were flying without anybody intercepting them for that amount of time, he said, I knew it was a stand down. I knew that something was fishy about that. And you can see that in this story if you take a look at the people who were trying to locate this high-flying UFO that did not show up on the radar, that did not have any call letters, but was moving faster than the commercial airplanes that were there. So that's an interesting story. Both of them, actually, quite frankly, I still find 9/11 far more fascinating than UFO stories, because we have an unidentified false story that I still don't have any answers for. A lot of people have put forward things. I'm not going to try to say what happened. I don't have an idea what happened. I just know what didn't happen, and I know that they used it as the basis to create an authoritarian police state in this country and a surveillance state in this country and a lot of wars that we are still fighting continuously now. We have not stopped fighting wars since September 11th, 2001. We've been at state of war now for 16 years with multiple countries. Another piece of bizarre news is the world's first human head transplant that has been successfully carried out. And I guess that depends on what your definition of success is. Remember the old joke? Well, the operation was successful, but the patient died. Well, this one, they're calling it a success, but the patient was already dead. They did it on a cadaver. And so now they say they're going to imminently do it on a live human. Got any volunteers out there? You believe these guys? Quite frankly, I'm becoming more and more skeptical of their pronouncements about what their technology can do. They have done the first human transplant, head transplant, on a human cadaver. Okay, so we've got Frankenstein there. Maybe they're going to hook him up to the big Van de Graaff generators and wait for a lightning strike to reanimate it. I don't know what's going to happen with that. But they've got Jeff Bezos now lobbying to get an Amazon deal to supply the Pentagon. This is a $53 billion. Oh, no, that's Amazon that is $53 billion. This is a multi-billion dollar deal, however, between the Department of Defense and Amazon. We've already seen a $600 million contract that Amazon has got with the CIA. That wouldn't have anything to do with his political leverage of the Washington Post that he bought for chump pocket change. I mean, look at $250 million purchase of the Washington Post of somebody that's making the kind of money that Jeff Bezos is doing. I worked it out once. We did a report on it. You normalize that to what somebody is that's making the median family income of around $50,000, $55,000, or just look at the number of hours that they would have to work to buy that. I mean, it's like you and I going down and buying a six-pack of Cokes for him to go down and get the Washington Post. And he's used that now to get not only the CIA contract, they're buddies, but now he's going to get a multi-billion dollar contract from the Pentagon as well. I'm David Knight. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm David Knight. In the next segment, we're going to be joined by Craig Richardson of E&E Legal, Environment and Energy Legal. He is the president there. And they have started a lawsuit to expose the phony ratification of the Paris Climate Trade Agreement. You cannot self-ratify a treaty. And we need to call out these criminal, illegal actions of the past administration, or they're going to be reinstated, or they're going to establish a precedent that we do not want to have established. So it's very important that people understand what's going on with that. We're going to be talking about him in the next segment. In this segment, I want to talk about the Pope, who is now saying that if you are a climate denier, again, this is a religion, folks, make sure that you understand this. And now we have this particular Pope is now the high priest of that religion, apparently going around He's made another amazing statement about climate change. We're going to take a look at the Pope, and we've also got some updates about Venezuela and other issues in just a moment. Before we do, real quickly, I want to tell you about a new product that we have here at InfoWarsStore.com, Floralife. It is a digestive probiotic formula. You know, if you've got a high-carb diet like most of us, if you've got a lot of unnatural ingredients like most of us, what that does is that takes out the bacteria that is in your gut that is good, the probiotics. You know, sometimes you get sick, you take an antibiotic, and that kills bacteria, but it also kills the good bacteria that is in your gut. You need that good bacteria to help to digest food. And so we have a new powerful probiotic formula, Floralife, that helps to boost your gut health and support a healthy immune system. We also have a continuation of our sales that we had last week. Some of them have had to be taken off because we've run out of stock. We had to reserve stuff for our people who have auto ship. But we do still have several items that are 50% off with free shipping, including Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink Mix, 50% off. Super Blue Fluoride Free Mouthwash, 50% off with free shipping. Also, Secret 12, our vitamin B12 is 50% off with free shipping. Caveman, Z-Shield, all of those 50% off with free shipping. And we have DNA Force now is back in stock, and we've put it off by 25%. And that's a very important product. At the beginning of the show, I read you the article about these people looking at a particular gene that they found in some Amish individuals that would give them, on estimate, another 10 years of life. How did they estimate that? Well, they look at the length of the telomere that is on their DNA strands. And these people had longer than usual telomeres. And it was, I don't know if they were born that way or if it was something in their environment that they did. But you can help to preserve your telomeres with ingredients like BioPQQ. There's been 170 clinical studies of that. And so you can help to slow that aging process. DNA Force is a great way to do that. Take a look at the studies. Take a look at the reviews that you see there. And you can get that at 25% off right now and free shipping at InfoWarsStore.com. We had a couple of stories here to give us an update on socialism today. You have the credit agencies have now officially declared Venezuela financially dead. It is in default. And this is something that has been rumored for the last couple of weeks. 2 weeks ago, everybody's saying, well, we think it's going to be in the next 24, 48 hours. And then they delayed it a little bit longer. Then the next week, we heard the same thing. And so for 2 weeks, we've been hearing that they were going to be officially in default. Well, this week, they officially went into default. They were not able to make any payments. As Margaret Thatcher said, the problem with socialism is you eventually run out of other people's money. And they have run out of other people's money. And it happened there. More quickly. It happens in the poorer countries more quickly than it does in the other countries like Sweden, simply because they're starting at a lower basis. But this is where socialism always takes us. Another example of it is North Korea. We had the guy who fled from North Korea, and he was shot multiple times. He has life-threatening injuries from those bullet wounds. He's being treated at a hospital. And as the doctor who is treating him, the lead surgeon there, Lee Kuk-jong, displayed photos showing dozens of flesh-colored parasites, including one that was 10.6 inches long. He removed them from the wounded soldier's digestive tract during a series of surgeries to save his life. He said, in my over 20-year-long career as a surgeon, I've only seen something like this in textbooks. Yeah, if you want to really see a textbook case of deprivation, of poverty, of starvation, of lack of hygiene, yeah, look at a communist country. Look at Venezuela. People having to, they're hunting pets down in the streets. They're hunting police down in the streets to try to steal their weapons. That's what it eventually comes to. They say he was flown by a helicopter to hospital on Monday after his dramatic escape to South Korea. A hail of bullets hit him. He's believed to be an Army staff sergeant in his mid-20s. He was stationed in the Joint Security Area in the U.S. and the U.N. Truce Village, according to a lawmaker, South Korea's ruling party. They say the parasitic worms that they found in him were once common in South Korea. But then what happened? They got rich because of capitalism and a free market. North Korea went the other way. They not only kept the parasitic worms, but they added new ones at the top. parasitic worms like the big fat one, Kim Jong-un. I thought it was so funny. One of the funniest things that happened this week, and we really didn't talk about it, was President Trump's tweet where Kim Jong-un called him an old man. And he said, I'm very offended by this. I would never call Kim Jong-un short and fat. but anyway, that parasite is now responsible for the starvation that they're experiencing in South Korea. Because unlike South Korea, they did not have the benefit of allowing people to improve their standard of living. And as I said earlier in the program, when I just mentioned this at the top of the program, I said maybe they should name these worms after Kim Jong-un, or at least give them some kind of a communist reference, genus, species, Leninist or something like that. I don't know. I'm not a biologist. So that's what's happening with socialism, and we don't want to see that come here. And one of the tactics to make that come here is to deprive us of the thing that makes our standard of living go up, and that is cheap energy. It's not just an issue of life expectancy either. It is our lifestyle. It's an issue of life expectancy. People live longer if they have cheap energy available to them. And that's one of the key things about the Paris Climate Accord when we talk to Craig Richardson in the next segment. But let's take a look at what the Pope said. Pope came out yesterday and rebuked climate deniers. Again, you know, if they're starting to talk about people being deniers, that we're talking about religion here, as being perverse. Pope Francis said climate change is, quote, one of the most worrisome phenomenon that humanity is facing. And he said people who fall prey to this have perverse attitudes. Well, let me tell you what he doesn't think is perverse. Let's just read through these headlines because I only got about 30 seconds here. Pope Francis has refused to associate with Islam with violence. So he doesn't think violent Islam is perverse. He says that Catholics should apologize to the LGBT community. He has also not seen it as perverse, all the pedophile priests that he has out there. He has pardoned 2,000 priests. And he said, we're going to show them mercy. What about showing mercy to their past and future victims? Because this is a pattern of behavior, and it goes all the way to the top. The number three guy is being investigated in Australia because they removed the statute of limitations on pedophiles. Has a massive history of pedophiles there, Cardinal Pell, the number three guy at the Vatican.
In a world of universal deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight. As I was just saying in the last segment, Pope came out yesterday and said the people who are climate deniers, people who deny the correlation between CO2 increase and global temperature increase, who don't want to sign on to the Paris Climate Accord, because that's essentially what he is pushing here, is the Paris Climate Accord. And even the people who believe that there is a man-made global warming, that there is a connection between CO2 and global warming, even those people say the Paris Climate Accord would not do anything. They've admitted that this last week. But Pope Francis wants to demonize you by saying that your attitude is perverse. And let me tell you what he doesn't think is perverse. He's absolved 2,000 pedophile priests as of last May. And then we saw before that, in February of this year, he had reduced the sanctions against some pedophile priests. And some of these individuals went on to do it again after he released them from this. So we've seen multiple incidences this last year. February, he reduces sanctions against many of them. Another guy who goes on to do multiple charges of that. Then in May, 3 months later, 2,000 of them, he says, that's okay. They've got a sickness. I'm not going to do anything about it. He also says, adultery, we're not going to do anything about that in communion. Rejecting all of the traditional key points of the Catholic Church, abortion, not too much about that. Pretty much silent about that. But then, again, going back to the pedophiles, we found a couple of months after that, we saw Cardinal Pell being going back to Australia to face charges because they removed the statute of limitations there. So he can't get upset about that kind of perversity. But if you think If you disagree, if you're skeptical, you are perverse. So we're talking to Craig Richardson. He is president of Energy and Environment Legal, ENE Legal, and you can find them at eelegal.org. They have a lawsuit that is going on right now to show what happened in the Obama administration to subvert our legal process and get us involved in the Paris Climate Agreement. I'm going to let him tell you about that. Thank you for joining us, Craig.
Morning, David. How have you been?
Doing good. So tell us a little bit about what you're doing with this lawsuit. Are you? What is your intention here? What do you hope to find as you're doing this lawsuit and getting discovery as part of this lawsuit?
Well, actually, the lawsuit, the most recent one, is through Competitive Enterprise Institute, CEI, one of our coalition partners. They are using emails that we have received from the State Department in an ongoing production that we have been getting for over a year based on what we brought action last year. And then through that action, we saw that it was very clear that the Obama administration, on its way out, trying to do this Paris Treaty, which you discussed in your setup, they obviously knew they weren't going to get a Senate consent, which is required by the U.S. Constitution. So they were trying to use whatever semantics they could use, executive order, executive decision. And they were trying to brainstorm really how to get around Senate involvement in this procedure, which, again, is called for in the U.S. Constitution. So we found some emails originally through our production that showed that there was this concern going between the Senate committee that have oversight over this as what into the to the administration and the State Department in particular. And so CEI also has been probing and unfortunately, even with the Trump administration, they have been stonewalling additional information that regarding this whole cover up, really, if you will.
Well, that's something that is there's been a lot of opposition within the Trump administration to even saying we're not going to be in the Paris Climate Agreement, because that was clearly something that, as I point out, it was in the power of President Trump to do. As a matter of fact, he was really required to do that because we did not get into that treaty in the constitutional process of ratification. President Obama just said, I'm going to self-ratify this. I'm going to sign this myself. I had John Kerry sign it. And I think it's also interesting when we look at these quote-unquote agreements, they like to use that term. They don't talk about them as being treaties. You know, NAFTA was going to be a free trade agreement. But then when you have disputes with it, the people who are involved in those disputes, they call them treaty lawyers. They put themselves out as treaty. So we have to understand this is a treaty. It falls under the Constitution, had to be ratified by the Senate, but he just self-ratified. Talk about what happened in terms of the delay that with the internal opposition within the Trump administration trying to keep President Trump from saying we're going to get out of this, telling him, oh, you don't have to really worry about that. I think there was a lot of gaslighting that was being attempted by individuals in the Trump administration saying you don't need to make a determination about this.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we saw that going on from really prior to the president taking over on January 20th, all the way until June 1st, when he made that famous announcement now in the Rose Garden saying that he was getting out. We weren't even sure up until 2 days before which way it was going to go. And it wasn't just leftover Obama people who were certainly there, but it was people like Rex Tillerson, his Secretary of State. It was Gary Cohn, who's his economic advisor in the White House, who's a Goldman Sachs guy whose clients have made a lot of money in this green area. And then it was his daughter and son-in-law. And so, you know, God bless the president, because he had a lot of people. He and Scott Pruitt were sort of the two men left at the Alamo. And he came out and said, no, I made this promise to the American people. As he put it during the campaign, it was a bad deal for America. It essentially further transfers our manufacturing base over to China, because China would have been exempt from all of this. It puts these draconian regulations that has already destroyed the European economy, and it would have done the same thing here. And he said, I'm a president of the United States for the American people. I'm not for the UN. And he stuck to his guns. And they're still.
And I think it's important. We even had a UN official come out and say, well, we need to do more. Because even with all the pledges that we've had under this Paris Climate Agreement, that's only about a third of what we think we need based on our models. And, of course, their models we disagree with. But even the people who are going with their models and their projections, even they say that it's not going to make any difference. But it would have made a huge difference economically, because this was an instrument, as you just pointed out, to transfer economic power from America to China, to India, to developing countries who are going to be allowed to continue to expand their building and construction of dirty coal power plants, as we will be capped and reduced through that amount of time.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's what this game is. This has nothing. I know you and I have talked about this before. This has nothing to do with reducing CO2 emissions, because as we all know, I mean, I think it was less than 0.25 degrees over 100 years. I mean, this isn't what it's about. And the UN themselves admits that it's not. The former secretary and then recently mm-hmm. another guy that was on the climate panel said this is actually more of an instrument of the redistribution of wealth. Now, right. when I was growing up, that was a euphemism for communism. And that's what it was. It was simply we're going to have a centralized power that's going to disperse the wealth around the world. We're going to have no input because we are the elitists. We know where it needs to go. And it needs to go to this country and that country. And we don't care about your sovereign laws. We don't care about the United States Constitution because we are in the know. And you guys just need to shut up and do what we say.
And it is a kind of global governance where they would have some supranational organization would decide which industries and even which countries are going to be allowed to prosper, which ones are going to be reduced and have their quality of living reduced. That's the key thing. We've seen President Trump with the TPP. That was the first thing he did when he came in. He stopped the TPP. And he said as he was making the tour this last week through Asia, he said we're going to have a new world trade order because we're not going to have these multinational, supranational organizations that are going to be dictating what our economy is going to be, dictating which industries are going to be allowed to succeed, which ones are going to fail. We're going to do one-on-one relations with other people to have trade, but we're not going to allow these global structures that are going to dictate this to individual countries. And that's really what the Paris Climate Agreement was. At its essence, that was the only thing that was going to accomplish. Even the people who believe in man-made global warming said it's not going to do anything about that.
No, and that's what it's always been. If you go back to the 1980s when this was all cooked up amongst the Rockefellers and some of their international people, that's what this has always been. This has always never been about the environment or cleaning up the world. I'm very proud of what the United States has done since the 1970s. I'm old enough to remember when the lakes were on fire. This isn't right. about environmentalism. This is about centralized control, period.
That's right. Absolutely. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about what you hope to, you and CEI hope to expose here, why this is important when we come back. You need to understand, folks, we got a victory here. We should be proud of the fact that the United States is the only nation that is not in this Paris Agreement. We just told you why that's a bad deal. We're the only ones. Be proud of it. Own it. I'm David Knight. We'll be right back. David Knight, and we're talking to Craig Richardson. He's with enelegal.org. That's Environment and Energy. We're talking about a lawsuit that they're partnering with the Competitive Enterprise Institute to try to find out and expose, I should say, that we know what happened. We know that Obama said, I'm going to self-ratify the Paris Climate Agreement, but they want to expose the tactics that were there. And ENE Legal Senior Fellow Chris Horner has written an article called Obama's Paris Climate Scheme Revelation. So I want to get Craig to walk us through what they know about that, what they want the public to know about that. And then we want to talk about an organization that Craig is involved with, speakupforliberty.org. But let's talk first about what people need to know, what the public needs to know about the Paris Climate Scheme of Obama.
Yeah, I mean, as I mentioned in the last segment, the emails that we were able to get through our Freedom of Information Act and subsequent suit from to the State Department a while back, over a year ago, emails did trickle out. And one of them showed that there was a clear effort between the State Department, and again, this is under the Obama administration, trying to pull the wool over their eyes or come up with ways that they could circumvent the Senate's constitutional authority to regulate or to have this called a treaty so that it would have to go through the Senate. And so the Obama administration was trying to do everything in its power and beyond its power to actually make sure, A, it wasn't called a treaty, and then to try to circumvent the Senate's authority. And so we have some emails going back and forth. One's coming out of the Senate office, particularly after the New York Times, actually or not, wrote an article showing what was going on in terms of the circumvention between the State Department and the Hill. And one of the staffers from the Senate Foreign Relations Committee sent back to the State Department staffer, hey, what are you doing here? I mean, you're clearly circumventing power, and I'm very concerned about what I read in the New York Times. And the guy kind of blew it off. He's like, oh, well, there's a lot of inaccuracies and all. I think the bigger issue here It just
but how did they justify that? Did they just say, well, don't worry, it's not a treaty, it's just an agreement? Their response or just say, none of your business? What'd they say?
Well, no, they said they basically said, oh, well, there's a lot of inaccuracies in the New York Times. They were wrong. So, I mean, that's what they always say. But I think the bigger issue isn't so much, the staffer and the back and forth, but essentially you can see the mindset of this previous president. He was a Marxist, and you could see mm-hmm. that he did it with Obamacare. He did it with whatever he did. The Clean Power Plan was struck down by the Supreme Court. The Paris Treaty was their next best option. The Senate was an obstacle. He didn't care about the Constitution. And so he came in as a monarch and said, well, we're going to blow off the hill. We don't need it. And
yeah, we also saw that in his efforts to fund Obamacare. When the Congress said, we're not going to provide the funds for this, then he kind of looked around and said, all right, I'll just steal it from Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And so then Congress took him to court, and the judge said, no, you can't do that. The Constitution clearly says they have to approve it, just like it says that the Senate has to ratify these treaties. They got to approve the funds. So they appealed it, and President Trump then said, well, we're going to drop the appeal. We're not going to continue to do that because it's illegal to do that. But we have to expose that. I think it's very important what you're doing, because people have to see that back and forth, even from people in the Senate, to understand that this is something we need to talk about, to understand how they tried to subvert this action, because this is not going to go away. It was delayed, as you pointed out, the last one by the people in the Trump administration. They're still trying to put us back in. And the next administration that comes in, if it's a Democrat or even if it's establishment Republicans, they're going to try to get us back in as well.
Right. And so, quite honestly, some of these people are still there in the State Department. I mean, like I said, Tillerson's no fan of ours, really. And he's got mm-hmm. Obama holdovers. And the Hill has shown a lack of backbone, regardless of whether they're Republicans or not. So, I mean, these people are still in Washington. They're Washington creatures. And so they need to be named. And if they're still around, there needs to be some accountability. And we need to, that's what this whole idea of a sunshine law is. We need to put sunshine on it. And we're going to keep fighting. It's sad that we got to keep pushing even with this administration. And again, it's not the president. It's a big administration with a lot of holdovers.
People need to understand they tried to subvert the constitutional process, and we need to name names, and we need to show back and forth the stuff that's there. That's why it's important what you guys are doing. All right, let's talk about the free speech group that you're involved with, because it was just a couple of days ago that we're talking about how Al Franken was groping the Bill of Rights and trying to rape the First Amendment in terms of social media, begging these organizations to shut down free speech. Now they've moved on to other aspects of Al Franken's conduct. But let's talk about this organization. It's Speak Up For, and that's the number four, speakupforliberty.org.
Yes, exactly. It was actually your show last spring where a woman from Silicon Valley who used to work with me in the 90s saw my show and got a hold of me, saw your show with my hit on and said, hey, I see you're in Washington still. She had moved on and got a law degree and a bunch of other things and said, I have this very innovative platform that I've developed. And she was patent pending. Now she's got them all approved, which is going to be an opportunity for people to move over away from YouTube and away from other things to actually, as you know, they're actually deplatforming people if they disagree with them. Google now owns YouTube. So mm-hmm. we're going to use it's going to be a nonprofit where actually it goes back to the founding fathers concept of a marketplace of ideas where actually, believe it or not, we want people to come and share their viewpoints and then, argue rationally and logically. So part of that will be sort of an experiment between what Google is now doing in terms of their algorithms and what the other Facebook is doing in terms of shutting down free speech and then allowing people to weigh in on controversial topics. We're going to try to do some basic education too on First Amendment. People don't really know what it is. And I know you're old enough to remember the Soviet Union, but what we're seeing here is really, I never thought I would see this in my lifetime where we would actually question first principles of the United States, like the freedom of speech. Yeah. I can remember the ACLU in the 70s used to defend the neo-Nazis. And I asked my dad, who was a judge, I was like, why are they doing that? And he goes, because they understand that regardless of how hateful that speech is, what is worse is having somebody come in from the top and tell you what is free, what you can say and what you can't. That's more dangerous.
But the left doesn't do that anymore. We had just last week, we had Congressman Quigley mentioning InfoWars by name and saying to the Twitter executive, how could you let this trend? Well, we took it down, Congressman. Well, why did it take you so long to take it down? Well, we're working on that algorithmically, and let's just have a private meeting and we can talk about this a little bit later. So is your site going to then be, you're looking at it, envisioning this as a process to be kind of a social media exchange? Is that what you're looking at?
Yeah, it's going to be a little bit more than Twitter because we're going to have more than 140 140 characters. If you're familiar with any of the boards like 4chan and other things, we're going to have a, you know, it's going to be very PG rated. We don't want to have anything inappropriate on there, but it's really going to be sort of an open opportunity for people to come in and discuss the issues of the day and to have a back and forth, quite honestly, the way Facebook used to be before it, before they started changing things. And then there's going to be the educational part about the talking, really. And we're going to have a lot of video content. Jenna, who's my partner in this, she and I are going to be doing a regular TV show. We're going to be tackling the issues of the day. We talked about potentially when we were first starting talking about the NFL, but now we're way beyond that. We're about them taking and not allowing people to speak on campuses. We're allowing them. I mean, colleges now are taking out conservative newspapers. And there's,
well, because what we have seen with the rise of social media, when they roped everybody in, they had it free, and it was free in terms of no cost, and it was free in terms of what you could say. And what we essentially had recreated, like you're talking about the founder saying, let's have a marketplace of ideas. We also had committees of correspondence, if you want, you know, people who could share articles and pass on information freely instead of having it algorithmically censored like we saw with Twitter when people started saying, hey, look what was exposed with the DNC leaks. And there was over 500,000 tweets about that. Twitter admitted in congressional testimony that they deleted 50% of those hashtag tweets. And then they deleted 25% of the ones about the Podesta emails because they didn't want you to see what was being revealed about these people.
Yeah, exactly. They did the same thing to Marshall Blackburn, who was running for Senate. They basically conveniently deleted all of her announcements tweets the day that she was announcing. Yeah, I mean that's crazy to have this being going on in America. I mean, that's not what we shed blood for the 200 plus years for that. I mean, this is so fundamental to who we are, and it's so obvious what they're doing, like the Al Frankens. And now they saw that when prior to us talking, I was reading some of those clips that you had up there about, you know, how they're using this whole concept of harassment. We have to protect. I mean, they always use they wrap it in these great euphemisms of things that they need to help. Oh, we have to protect you, so we're going to do this. We have to protect you. You have to be safe. That's why we have 12 cameras on every street corners. That's why we read every one of your emails, just because we have to make sure you're safe.
And they're going to be the arbiters of what is true and what is fake. They're going to decide what is safe and what is not safe speech. And that is the thing that is truly, truly oppressive about this. I remember when we only had 3 channels and they were very tightly regulated. We had a fair fairness doctrine is what they called it. And it was after we broke that fairness doctrine that we broke the control of the establishment. So that's very important. Check it out. It's speakupforliberty.org. Thank you so much for joining us, Craig Richardson, eelegal.org. You have to also understand, folks, how the Obama administration tried to subvert not only the Constitution, but our economy. And that fight is going to continue to go on. President Trump did the right thing, but we're going to have to know what they tried to do so we can keep it from happening again. That's it for our program. Thank you for joining us.